Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Paper or plastic, car or bike, imported bananas or locally grown strawberries. I'm Jamie Floyd in for Brian Lehrer, and my next guest has calculated the greenhouse gas impact of 100 different items and activities, and his findings might surprise you. Mike Berners-Lee does environment consulting in England, and he's the author of How Bad Are Bananas? The Carbon Footprint of Everything, which is now coming out in the U.S. He joins us from London. Mike, welcome to WNYC.
Thank you.
So, Mike, we're going to take listener calls and questions in a minute, but first I have one of my own that I just have to ask, and it has to do with defining some terms. What are you talking about when you say you calculate the carbon footprint?
Okay, so what I mean by it is it's actually not just carbon, it's all the greenhouse gases, and it's the full, it's all the emissions that take place in the production of a product or of an item or of doing an activity. So it's everything that has all the emissions that have to take place in order for something to be produced or for an activity to take place.
So in order for me to eat that banana, you're going to help me figure out my calculation. All right. So
yeah,
we're going to take calls
so,
for you, Mike. I hope you've got your calculator out.
Anyone
who has a call or a question for Mike Berners-Lee, give us a ring, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. And Mike, while we wait, let's go through some examples that we listed at the top. So, you know, the paper plastic dilemma is a big one here in the U.S. You know, everybody's toting around their little bags to the market. Does that account for the fact that paper biodegrades? I mean, this is what everybody's thinking to themselves. I'm going to get paper. It's going to biodegrade. I'll feel better about myself. But is that really the case?
Okay, well, the first thing to say about paper and plastic bags is that there are other environmental considerations as well. So plastic's nasty for lots of reasons in landfill, and it's getting into all our ecosystems and all the rest of it. But just from a carbon point of view, if a paper bag degrades in landfill, that emits methane, and that's a very potent greenhouse gas. And also it takes a lot of energy to make paper from trees. So there's a big carbon footprint, surprisingly high carbon footprint in a paper bag. So if you're just thinking about the carbon, the plastic bag is probably a much better bet. And it probably works better too.
Especially if you use it over and over again.
Well, that's right. Yeah. Yeah, so definitely, the more you reuse your bags, and the stronger and tougher they are, probably the lower carbon footprint they're going to have over the course of everything.
Now, this is something that just surprises me in the book. How can driving a car ever be better than riding a bike?
Okay, well, it takes a pretty extreme circumstance, and the book's trying to be, as well as just being informative, it's trying to be fun and quirky as well.
It's a little cheeky.
It's a little cheeky, but it is actually, there's a serious point behind it too. So if you are riding a bike and you were powered entirely by air freighted fruit and vegetables, which is probably unlikely, but if that's where you were getting your energy from to power the bike, you would actually be, you would have a very high carbon footprint. Whereas if you get an economical car and you put four people in it, it becomes quite an efficient way of getting around. So I'm still waiting to hear from somebody who's prepared to travel up and down the length of the United States powered entirely by air-freighted asparagus. But if anybody does try it, I'd like to hear from them, see how they get on. But that would be a very carbon-intensive way of doing it.
Well, how about the bananas? Because the cover of the book, and I encourage everyone to look for the book and see the cover and, of course, read everything inside, but the cover is just adorable. It's a banana all wrapped up and ready to go airmail, I suppose it is. It looks sort of like a UPS sticker of some sort. But how are bananas? Please tell me it's all right, because I love bananas. Am I increasing my carbon footprint every day, twice a day, when I have my bananas?
No, there's lots of good news in the book, and bananas is just one part of the good news. So thankfully, you know, bananas aren't usually packaged up like the one on the front cover. There's usually hardly any packaging. Although they might come from the other side of the world, they usually go on a boat, and that's quite an efficient way of getting food around the world, actually. And it's not a disaster that they've traveled all that distance, provided they're on a boat, not an aeroplane. And they're grown in a nice hot climate, and they're full of nutrition, and they're pretty good low-carbon food, actually. They're great.
All right. I feel better about myself already, which is what this is all about. We all want to feel good about ourselves and our choices, and I want to get to the PC nature of all of this in just a moment. But we do have a question here. I want to remind our listeners that you can call in and ask your questions for Mike Berners-Lee. If you have any questions about your own carbon footprint, about the choices you make every day for a lot of different reasons, cutting your carbon footprint to ease global warming, or any other green choices you make, Mike, we have someone call in to ask if the new diesel engine cars are better than the old when it comes to the carbon footprint.
The answer is yes, they are, because they're more efficient. And diesel and petrol, actually, there's not that, from a carbon point of view, there's not that much difference in them. You normally get more miles per gallon out of diesel than petrol, but there's a bit more there's a bit more carbon emitted from a litre of diesel than there is from a litre of petrol. So when you take those two things into account, diesel and petrol are reasonably similar to each other in their carbon intensity for driving. But so the critical things with a car are to not drive a larger one or a less efficient one than you need to, and to drive it carefully and put more than one person in it, and better still, most of the time, to find another way of traveling if you can.
I failed in my excitement about the bananas to give out the phone number, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. And, of course, you can always post your question at WNYC.org at Brian Lehrer show page. And, you know, I read that you give Valentine's Day flowers low marks for being out of season, which, you know, was very sad for me, being a romantic type. But Sunday was Mother's Day here in the United States, and that's springtime here. Would you give those flowers higher marks?
Yeah, absolutely. Especially if you, as long as you choose an in-season flower, and especially if it's been grown locally, that's even better. Yeah, definitely. So all carbon footprints are about bang for buck. So it's about how much is it worth to you to incur this carbon footprint, for what it gets you. So I wouldn't want anyone to lose their relationship for want of a Valentine's Day rose. But equally, I've talked to a lot of people now who say that actually they out-of-season flowers have lost some of their romantic appeal, because they understand that they're, you know, there's more to them than meets the eye, and they do have a big environmental impact, and they'd prefer to have something else. So I know one person who gave her husband a bunch of bananas on Valentine's Day, and she said she made it very romantic. And so, you know, there are alternatives out there.
And a copy of your book, I take it.
I think she'd done that sometime as well.
All right. Now, I have to ask you this question, because I'm guessing that the Berners-Lee name, which is rather unusual, makes you the brother of Tim Berners-Lee, right?
Yes, that's right. Yes.
Inventor of the World Wide Web.
Yes, that's right.
So that means I have to put you on the spot, because ultimately, you know, I'm a journalist, and I have to ask the big, as much fun as we're having here, I have to ask the question about the big footprint the web must have, and emailing and texting. There have to be some environmental implications for all of that.
Yeah, well, it's very interesting. So I'm certainly not sort of against the digital world and the digital economy, but it is very interesting. So sending an email has a much, much smaller carbon footprint than sending a letter. But if you send a few hundred emails, then you start getting close to what you would have sent if you'd sent a letter. Hmm. And lots of us send many, many, many more emails than we ever would have sent letters. And that's only a small part of the digital age. So if you think of buying a book online, you know, nowadays you've got, you know, the web has got, Amazon or whoever has got 2 seconds flat to search the world's published materials, even at the busiest time of day, and tell you what you can buy from where. And that's a dramatically bigger expectation than we used to have 20 years ago, when we might walk off down to a bookshop and spend 10 minutes just searching a few thousand books. So because we want more and more of this data, and we want so much more of it than we used to have, it actually ends up having a carbon footprint which is about like the carbon footprint of all the paper that we used to put in our filing cabinets.
Yeah, and,
so it's amazing how...
And certainly Tim could not have anticipated the level of activity on the web at its inception. Let's take a call from Ron in Westchester. Ron, you're on the line with the author of How Bad Are Bananas? Go right ahead.
Hi there. I fly a private airplane, a small Cessna 172. I go out to Nantucket. It takes me about an hour and 15 minutes. And I burn 10 gallons an hour. So that's about 14 gallons to get out there. Is that less of a carbon footprint than getting in my car and driving for 6 or 7 hours and then taking a boat across the Sound?
Well, Mike, this is probably a rare question, but
okay,
how
so
about it, Mike Berners-Lee?
How fast can I do the sums? So 10 gallons an hour. So I'd say an hour, you're probably getting through about 100 kilos of carbon dioxide equivalent. I assume your plane stays at quite low altitude. Am I right?
I think we've lost him, but...
Okay.
Yes, Ron, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. I stay at low altitude, about 4,000, 6,000 feet.
Okay, so I don't think you'd incur all the high-altitude problems that most aviation has, which makes things about twice as impactful. So I think you'd stay underneath that. I think you would. And
I do.
How far is it? How far would the drive be?
The drive is about 7 hours.
About 7 hours. So, so it's a few hundred miles.
Yes.
Okay. I think they're going to be similar. Actually, I think they're going to be similar. I think if you put some, can you put passengers in your plane?
Oh yes, we fill it up.
Okay.
We take four people, you know, myself and three others. And it takes us about an hour and 15 minutes to get out there instead of seven.
Okay, I think it might be, don't hold me to this, I think it might be a carbon improvement on driving.
I feel better now.
All right.
I'll fly more.
All right, Ron. Well, then maybe I'll go out and buy a plane. It's great advice. All right, Greg, you're in Stamford, Connecticut. Keep it really quick because we're tight on time. What's your question?
No problem. The automobile industry seems to be going to an electric car standard. Mm. It's counterintuitive to me that electricity is generated from burning coal, that would be any better from a carbon footprint than burning oil, gasoline.
Yeah, you've hit the nail on the head. The electricity has to come from somewhere, and the vast majority of it comes from fossil fuel, and that's not going to change quickly. And so you're absolutely right. Electric cars, they're slightly more efficient, so there is a slight improvement, but they're not going to change. They're not going to basically change the carbon footprint of driving.
Excellent question, Greg. Thank you for your call. And we had several calls along that same line. I have to ask a final question to you, Mike. You write about people needing a sense of scale, and you write about your friend who worried so much about paper towels or electric hand dryers. And I get worried about this paper versus plastic question at the market. What really has a big impact, and should we be so anxious about every choice we make?
Yeah, I mean, good question. So the book is just as much about relaxing about the little things. It's about forgetting about the things that don't matter so much and just concentrating on two or three things that do. So, for example, you know, my friend has asked me about how to dry their hands, flies across the Atlantic a few times a month. So, you know, the big deal for them, the flying is about a million times more important for them than the plastic bags, and they should understand that. And everybody's got different things in their lives which are the big things that they can do something about. And that's what you should do. Target two or three things, and especially if you can find things that make your life better, which most of us can, just by living a bit differently.
And, of course, buying your book. Mike Berners-Lee, thank you so much. Your book is How Bad Are Bananas? And you've given us a lot to think about. We appreciate your being here. It's available in the U.S. this month. I'm Jamie Floyd. Brian Lehrer really will be back tomorrow. And don't forget, an online chat begins right now at our politics site, itsafreecountry.org. All your questions about immigration policy answered. Join in. And thanks for listening.